It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for Lightning Radio. The lightning is on the streets, it's in your mailboxes, and as we do most Thursday mornings, it is on the radio where we get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning. Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Lightning, here with us via Skype on the queue. Good morning, Bill. Welcome back to Lightning Radio.
Good morning. Glad to be back after our one-week hiatus. I hope you had a time out of town or a vacation.
We sure did. We did. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. So, Bill, let's touch on what is not on your main story on the main front page here today, but something that is very important to be mentioning, and that is your headline here: "The Lightning marches on against odds." We got some anniversaries to celebrate, right?
Yes, we do indeed. And I had this last in the lineup.
I know.
And you suggested we promoted the first in the lineup.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that. We're not that big on blowing our horn, but we did in this week's Shining Light column on the editorial page of the Hendersonville Lightning, and probably soon to be posted on HendersonvilleLightning.com, where we talk about, I'll just read a little bit of the start of it, where we say, "Shanghaied by coronavirus coverage, our graduation section, planting tomatoes, and walking the dogs, census down to 2 Jack Russell rescues after Tater Tot died at age 16 and a half last month, I failed to note recent anniversaries of the Lightning." And that is that we had a birthday of HendersonvilleLightning.com, which go live of that was April 24 of 2012. And we debuted the print product a couple weeks later on May 9 of 2012. And as friends of the Lightning have heard me say on Lightning Radio or in those long ago in-person stump speeches, they told me we wouldn't make it 9 months, 9 weeks, or 9 days, and we're marching on toward our 10th birthday. And we just talk about how we've managed, although the retail print advertising market has kind of gone into the deep recession, into the toilet, we usually say. But we still, actually, that's coming back a little bit. And we've gotten, we've stayed strong with some other legal advertising. And one of the things we talk about in here is that the Google News initiative awarded the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, because you did have to have a strong digital presence to qualify, awarded Lightning Media Inc., it's the overall company, $5,000 from the Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. So we're keeping going. People might have seen a couple of new recent bylines in Andrew Dundas, a rising senior at UNC at Chapel Hill, and Gracie Milner. We've mentioned her a couple times on Lightning Radio before, rising senior at Hendersonville High School, who are doing a lot of work for us, not all coronavirus related, but a lot of it is. Gracie in particular has done a lot of she kind of does a school beat for us, because she's inside the schools and is able to tell us what's actually going on in the schools in terms of remote learning and that whole issue, which will continue. We could talk about that a few minutes from now, but apparently remote learning will continue for Henderson County for a while longer.
Absolutely. One of the things I really want to mention, too, as we're talking about this, Bill, is what I think is one of the most important things of this article, and one of the things that I'm certainly proud of with us here at the station. One of the things that our in the fact that our products are somewhat similar is, against the naysayers, you say right here, "I knew what they didn't know. I knew the audience. On a gut level, I sensed the need for the kind of product I wanted to deliver. The Lightning," as one reader said, "scratches the itch our community has for wanting to know." That's very important for people to understand, Bill.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for reading that part as well. I think that's right. I think it's right. I hear it about WTZQ, and we're gratified and humbled to hear it about the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. And you really got the local news franchise of people said recently when they saw the issue with all the high school seniors, that boy, the Lightning just really gets the local community. So we're always gratified to hear that, and we do think that's something we recognize. We had all along a vision, and we thought if we could execute the vision, we didn't have any doubt that the audience would come after it, and it has.
Well, congratulations. We certainly appreciate our partnership with you and look forward to many, many more years of Hendersonville Lightning and Lightning Radio.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, we're on the way to being 10 years old. So
fantastic. Like
people said, that would never happen. But it happened.
Well, here we go. So let's do what we do best, Bill. Let's get to the news. Let's get behind the headlines now. And let's start with the front page here of this week's Lightning. That's again on the streets and in your mailboxes. Three candidates seeking appointment to the vacant seat on the county commission. That would be the vacant seat that the passing of Charlie Messer is providing, correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah, once again, staying on theme, one of those local stories in the Lightning, and yeah, only in the Lightning. Three candidates have raised their hand. That's not to say there couldn't be more. There could be next week on July 30. There could be more that get nominated from the floor when the Republican Party Executive Committee meets. But the ones we write, the ones we have right now are Daniel Andreotta, co-founder, managing partner of a financial advisory group called Integrity Financial Group. Jennifer Capps Balcom, local folks will recognize that that's a name in Capps that goes back certain parts of the county. You can't throw a rock without hitting a cap. So that gives her kind of that local. And another mountain native, all three are natives of the area, Sheila Franklin, well-known in the Fletcher, Andyville area, Hoopers Creek, middle school career teacher who serves on the Fletcher Town Council. And we've got kind of many sketches of each of those candidates, who they are, where they live, a little bit about their family, and also a little bit about their platform, if you will, that they've either told us, they've both told us in interviews and in each case as well, sent out to members of the Republican Party Executive Committee. And people might, when we say that word, Executive Committee, often that sounds like, well, maybe that's the top five officers or so. It's not. It's more than 40 people, because as long as all the, I'm not sure, sometimes there's vacancies in some of these positions, but it would include the chairs of each of the 35 precincts, voting precincts of Henderson County. It would include all elected officials, such as all the county commissioners, and they are all Republicans. So all four of those remaining ones would be on it. The elected officials like the Chucks, State Representative Chuck McGrady, and State Senator Chuck Edwards, Jake Johnson, the state representative, and the party officers, chair, vice chair, treasurer, secretary, and so forth. So it's more than 40 people. It's not going to be Zoomed. It's not going to be open, but they will meet on July 30. They will select one of these names, send it over to the Board of Commissioners, which doesn't have any choice under state law, but to accept that name. And keep in mind also, Mark, that with the death of Charlie Messer, who obviously was an incumbent and sitting county commissioner, this person will fill his unexpired term. They hope to make it, and they plan to make it one name. And also be on the ballot, because Charlie had filed for a sixth term. We've been up there in the courthouse and in the old 100 North King County building, for that matter, for 20 years, and was going on for a sixth term. So it's both those things: fill the unexpired term and be on the ballot against Debbie Rountree in the November 3rd election.
Wow, it'll be an interesting few months coming up. Very much so. Let's step to another story we have here, and it's so interesting. It's sort of feast or famine. Historic bed and breakfast owners warn of against an oversupply of rooms or a room glut, because we've had another downtown boutique hotel ask for some rezoning, I believe, for them to build another boutique hotel downtown.
Exactly right. This was really kind of a surprise.
Yes, it was.
And as you mentioned there, and I think the fourth paragraph of the story, we say the group is called Catalyst, not like a catalyst, like the catalyst that that started the fire or the accident or whatever, but C-A-T-E-L-L-U-S. And the Catalyst proposal comes in the wake of two bigger hotel projects that are in the works and has set up somewhat of a feast or famine dilemma for the city council. So think back a very short, maybe a year or a little bit more ago, when the city council said, you know what we really need is a hotel downtown, with maybe a small convention space and a restaurant or a bar. And they sent out an RFP. And actually, this group, Catalyst, was one of the ones, there weren't many, I think there were two respondents only, was one of the ones that responded and actually didn't make it. But it tells me, and it interviewed, well, the Lightning found out that they found out enough about the city and the demand to think, oh, well, yeah, let's respond to this RFP, let's respond to this request for proposals, and let's do a hotel in Hendersonville. Well, they didn't get picked, and the group out of Fletcher that's going to do one of those Spring Hill Suites hotels, or at least that was the plan, somewhat on hold now, that was selected. But Catalyst came back and said, well, we'll just do one without this city partnership on the Dogwood lot. Wow. Well, in the meantime, you have the Cedars proposal for some for quite a few rooms and condos and convention space and a spa and a swimming pool. And you still got the Spring Hill Suites proposal, kind of. It's still hanging out there, but somewhat on hold in the pandemic environment. And now the Catalyst, which is really neat rendering shows, is five stories right in the backyard across Sturt Street, but directly in the backyard. This is the old Lampley Motors property in the backyard of the historic courthouse.
Yeah, and I really respect in reading this article what so many of these bed and breakfast owners, their comments. It really wasn't another hotel coming. Their comments just about the fact that a gluttony of rooms happening in the short amount of time and what that actually could cause.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, to be fair, too, I think that the story is a balanced story. And
yeah.
And Stephen Barker, the developer for this Charlotte group, says, well, we've identified the need. We think we're different from the Waverly Inn. We think we're different from the Charleston Inn. We think we're different from the Henderson. We think we'd be different from Spring Hill Suites if that was there, and different from the Cedars project. Maybe all boats rise. Maybe more people come to Hendersonville.
Right.
To stay in these rooms. And I think there's an argument for letting the market decide. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, it's competitive, but it's certainly possible that the people that like the B&B environment are not the same people that want to choose a brand new hotel, whether it's the Cedars or the Spring Hill or what this is being called. They call it the Courthouse Inn, but I think that's kind of a working name. I don't know for sure it'll be that, but we'll see. And as Mr. Barker also said, you know, it's not really even clear if and when all of these projects would come about. They wouldn't all necessarily open, he said, on the same day.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to bird dog that, of course, and see which ones actually make it, which ones break ground, which ones open, which ones are busy, and maybe which ones are less busy.
And where exactly does this one stand right now?
On the way to the Hendersonville Planning Board, because they already went to what was introduced, oh gosh, 2-3 years ago now, is they used to not have this, but the very first public airing, you might say, particularly of large projects like this, is what's called a neighborhood compatibility meeting. And that's what we covered last week, where all these comments were made, that where these inn owners were worried about the potential oversupply of rooms. So next to the Hendersonville planning board, and then after that, it would go to, at this point, probably a September or even October time frame to the Hendersonville City Council.
Okay. All right. We'll continue to watch that story here with the Lightning. Hey, we'll be back in just a bit with more stories on property and things happening here in Hendersonville and Henderson County. You're listening to Lightning Radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com.
Lewis Williams & Sons is the area's largest distributor of Makita tools and your Makita authorized service repair center with a complete line of Makita cordless outdoor power equipment, chainsaws, blowers, string trimmers, hedge trimmers, lawn mowers, and more. Visit Lewis Williams & Sons in sunny and friendly East Flat Rock at 300 West King Street, just down the street from Case & Builder Supply. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Saturday, 8 till noon, Lewis Williams & Sons. Online at lewiswilliams.com.
And we're back with Lightning Thursdays with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Bill, let's stay on property. You got a story here about a property swap with the city of Hendersonville. Talk to us about that story.
Yeah, I think this wasn't the head, but the subhead could have been the old real estate motto of location, 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 because why else would the city of Hendersonville want to swap the 60-acre Berkeley Park property for the 2-acre Edwards Park property?
Wow.
There at Five Points, kind of next to the VFW and also adjacent to Bruce Drysdale School and the the diner restaurant there. But the answer is, remember a while ago when we talked about replacing Fire Station 1, which is only less than 20 years old, but replacing Fire Station 1, and that would mean the closing of the Lower Corn mini golf course.
Uh-huh.
What the relocation of it did not go over well with the people of Hendersonville and greater Hendersonville and Henderson County. The Hendersonville City Council has sort of quietly shelved the idea of doing a new fire station that way and thought of this idea, actually thanks to the school board suggesting maybe they could might make this swap of building a new fire station, one on the Edwards Park. People think of it maybe as a Scout Hut property as well, and that's going to be another historic thing that people will say, oh, the Scout Huts go back to the 40s or 50s. I'm not sure the age. People will think about that. But they're already working on maybe there's some other property that the Scouts can use if they need to have Boy Scout or Girl Scout meetings. This really came from the school board, apparently, as a possibility for property that the school board could use to develop, because as all we've talked about, we're already $60 million into a new Hendersonville High School and renovation and so forth. But it doesn't do much for a regular baseball diamond that would be the home field of the Bearcats, or a regular place aside from Jackson Park that the Bearcats could use as their home tennis courts. And there's a possibility they could build those some tennis courts at Berkeley Park that the Bearcat varsity baseball team could use the historic Berkeley Park Stadium, which was built, you might recall, in the early 1950s for the Berkeley Spinners.
Yeah.
Industrial League team. We've had coverage of that before. And anyway, Berkeley Park could be improved a lot and made available most of the time for the public. And the reason that's important is because the city, which has had this property for more than 10 years, I forget, it's in here somewhere, but it commissioned a big consultant study of how to improve it back in 2013. The price tag came back at $4.3 million for a new gateway, a baseball complex, soccer fields, a quote, destination playground, picnic areas, a memorial tree garden, an overlook garden, a dog park, 3.5 miles of trails, and a connection to the Ocklawaha Greenway. And here, 7 years later, none of that has been done, with the exception of they did get that Greenway segment completed from roughly Patton Park to Berkeley Park. But none of the rest has been done. Voters overwhelmingly rejected that $6 million bond issue back in 2013 that would have funded park improvements. And in an interview with the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, Mayor Volk said, you know, we'd love to be able to do it, but it's way beyond our budget. Voters didn't go for it. And the grants that we've sought have all been turned down. So why should we sit on it if we can't improve it? And if the school board can improve it, then better for everyone.
Interesting. That'll be interesting to follow. Let's talk about more property stuff, and that's First Avenue West. Some potential plan for 10 condos over on First Avenue West in South Washington.
Well, exactly right. And again, the rendering, the picture tells some thousand words here. Yeah. Of what that would look like. It's two quadplexes, really, with, you don't really see, then kind of in the backyard, there's a garage and a couple studio apartments over the garage, creating 10 condos. This was a little bit of a, there was quite a bit of friction over it, I think back in January, but the developer Andrew Riddle had made some compromises and tried to make it fit in with the neighbors a bit better. So at least for now, that one's moving on. And you asked a while ago about what the status or where this is in the time frame. This already went through the Hendersonville Planning Board a couple weeks ago. So this one is on the way to the Hendersonville City Council, as is in this same story under this same headline. The 291 apartment proposed for Lakewood Road, if people don't know where that was, it's a U-shaped piece of property, 29 acres, that really surrounds the post office annex. And if you don't know where the post office annex is, it's just down the hill from the Sam's Club and the Walmart shopping center. So that would really increase the traffic on Lakewood Road and on Francis Road. So we'll see what comes of that as well.
Bill, give us the lowdown on this story under your local news section, and it's about Hendersonville police responding to some face mask complaints.
Yeah, we talked about that on a few different shows. And this is a follow-up based on our public records request after the city council had that long and at times heated discussion about whether to do it, that is, whether to enforce Governor Roy Cooper's Executive Order 147 about wearing masks and how to do it. And what was really not a vote, but a 3-2 consensus. They said, "Yeah, we want to enforce it, and we want to write tickets to we want the police or someone." They didn't even specify this, and it could be zoning enforcement officers, write tickets to businesses in particular, not individuals that were violating the mask order. In other words, not wearing masks, whether it was shopkeepers and clerks or servers at a restaurant, those restaurants that were flouting the rule. So we found out there were, I think we got an account here of a total of 7 different situations. People can read in the Lightning what those were. No tickets, no arrest, nobody in jail yet for violating the mask order. But yes, when there are complaints, city police are going out to check on it and talking to the people.
It's interesting also that it goes both ways. I'm looking at one of the paragraphs here where Chief Herbert Blake said that one caller called in and was upset that Walmart asked her to put a mask on. So it seems like calls are coming from both sides.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that one. And that came, I guess, a day or two. This was last Wednesday, where we say here, Walmart joined many other national retailers and announced that it would begin to require customers to wear a mask. You might have seen, I think, a day or two after that, Harris Teeter joined many, many other retailers and supermarkets and also saying, okay, we're now going to require a mask. And as far as I can recall, I think the Fresh Market might have been the first supermarket in our town to require it, and now most do. And I think Ingles came maybe a day or so after Harris Teeter. So I think pretty much if you want to go food shopping, you better have your mask.
Yep. Absolutely. Bill, let's squeeze in a couple of more stories here while we've got some time. And I love this story in your life section here about a greeting card hobby that has morphed into a nonprofit for good.
Yeah, this is really neat. Conrad and Kathy Roble. Kathy, she was in nationals. She had a national sales job, and it was kind of it was busy and high stress. But she had, even back then, she had this hobby of homemade crafting, crafty hobby of making, creating her own greeting cards. So then they started making them, and we have a picture here, BC, before coronavirus, of the volunteers in the Robles home, like looks like in a dining room table or something. That's a little production area back when they could be together. They're making greeting cards. And now this story, this is by the correspondent, in part Google funded. Andrew Dundas has done this neat story about how they're still doing it. And they put supplies out on their porch, and these same the volunteers come pick them up, and they make the cards, and then they drop the finished product back off at the loading dock, you might say, there, which is their front porch. And all the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds that benefit Blue Ridge Humane Society, Four Seasons Hospice Foundation, Interfaith Assistance Ministry, Open Arms, Safe Light, and St. Gerard House. So, and they buy supplies by either they pay for themselves, I suppose, but they get donations as well. So they say if you donate a dollar, it creates $10 worth of charity for these agencies.
Wow, that's fantastic. I love that story. Let's go back one. I skipped one, Bill. Something that has happened, of course, since our last Lightning Radio, and that is the school board ordering 6 weeks of remote learning for the beginning of this coming school year.
Yeah, this happened on Monday afternoon, extending its pretty long meeting into Monday evening, where the school board heard the whole Plan B proposal from Superintendent Bo Caldwell and Associate Deputy Superintendent Dr. John.
John Bryant.
John Bryant, excuse me, about how this would work, including all kind of the challenges, what would happen to, I mean, any family that just wanted to opt out of this going to school could opt out. They were going to go to school for, students were going to go to school, students in higher grades, grade three and higher, were going to go to school for a week and then have 2 weeks off. It was complicated. There was a lot of extra work for everybody. The school board just wasn't comfortable enough with it at this point to go with Plan B. So they're back down to Plan C, which is remote learning with a little bit of an asterisk. It's going to be a little bit more it's going to look a little bit more like a classroom. I think you can read the story to figure out how this will work.
Yeah.
But it's going to look a little bit more like a classroom experience. So they'll try that now, beginning August 17 for a 6 week period. I'm not sure what will change so much between now and the end of September that will make the school board have a more agreeable appetite for this at that point. But at this point, for 6 weeks, remote learning.
Mm. Boy, I tell you what, we keep thinking there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and the tunnel keeps getting longer on us. So, Bill, let's talk about one more really great feel-good story here that is on the Lightning website. It's on HendersvilleLightning.com, but not in the print version, and that is our friends Derek and Nicole and their son Vigo, who own Crate Wine Market and Project. Boy, they have had their mountains to climb, but they still talk about how great the people are here in this town, and which is why they live here. They've had another thing that happened to their store recently, and the community stepped up and helped them.
Absolutely right. Yeah, Derek and Nicole Cote, they really created a great market and a great following, and they've lived in Detroit and Nashville and Richmond, Virginia, and they sought out and found a place that they wanted to grow roots in. We all know this is the easiest place, especially if you have a young family, it's one of the easiest places in the whole wide world to grow, to settle in and grow roots, and that's what Derek and Nicole found. When they say it's called the Crate Wine Market and Project, I think the project part of it is kind of their community involvement. Mm-hmm. So they've done well, but despite that, they've actually had two burglaries. And then all of a sudden, a couple of weeks ago, they woke up one Friday morning, and a sales clerk that was opening early in the morning opens the door to find that it's raining inside the crate. And there's a huge waterline break, and it's literally is raining a ton of water that's just it covers the floor. It's like a flood, you know, of several inches at least on the whole place. So it's basically ruined. It has to be completely gutted, has been completely gutted at this point. But what happened in the course of the next 72 hours was they sent out an email to their email list, which was more than 1,000 people. That began to spread. They were very big about big shout out to a certain radio station, WTZQ, that got a hold of it, and all day long on that Friday broadcast, hey, get down the crate. They have to sell all of their bottles because of the very strict ABC laws. They couldn't sell out of their home. They couldn't put up an umbrella and try to sell it outside. They couldn't relocate. If they did try to relocate, the ABC board told them it would take about as long to get a new license and a new permit for a new location as it would for them to repair and rebuild, which is about a 2 to 3 month process. But big shout out for their customers for responding, for WTZQ for putting it out. And we went and interviewed them. This was actually last weekend at the tail end, where they literally had just about sold out of inventory from this line of people that snaked around the building and had people waiting in line for an hour to an hour and a half or longer, all in a good mood, all in the spirit of we got to help Derek and Nicole and plus get a bottle of wine at a 15% discount. So it's a bad news, good news story for sure.
Well, thank you so much for doing what you do best, shining a light on some of those great stories, Bill. We appreciate it. Believe it or not, there is still more in the Lightning that we haven't covered that's on the streets and in your mailboxes. Bill, how can people pick up a copy of their Lightning for this week?
Well, they still can go on year 10, go all around the county to any of the 60 Lightning Orange racks to get one, or by going to HendersvilleLightning.com and going to subscribe and joining the growing legions of Lightning fans to get their Lightning today via U.S. mail on Lightning Thursday, or by calling Jan at 698-0407.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.
Hi, folks. This is Chris Wright with Diamond.